It's the Barry Pod on 99.3 thevine.com.
This is the Barry Pod, recorded November 3rd, 2023. And this time, my guest in the pod is Rex Stoltz. Hi there.
Hello, Barry.
Thanks for being in the pod.
Thanks for the invitation.
So there's two kinds of Barry Pods that I do. There's issue-oriented Barry Pods where we talk about infrastructure and politics and finance and who knows what. And then there's what I call the personality pods. And you're a personality pod for me today.
Oh,
you
all right.
You cool with that?
Yeah, sure.
Because I think you have...
Especially because I didn't prepare anything. So.
And that's the way I like it.
All right.
There are certain people who have traits and qualities that I find fascinating. And you have a few of them and I want to dive into it. But let's start like we'd like to do at the beginning. You grew up in a military family, correct?
That's right.
Meaning that you moved around, lived in a lot of different places?
Correct. My father was a fighter pilot in the Marine Corps, and I lived in more places growing up than I can recount. I guess my youngest memories might be, you know, preschool age, living in Lexington Park, Maryland, where he was a test pilot for the, you know, the famous jet from Top Gun, the Tomcat. My father was a test pilot for that jet. And we lived in Yuma, Arizona for a few years after that. Back to Quantico, famous Marine Corps base. That was awesome. I loved living there. And then we went from there to he got stationed at Kaneohe Bay on Oahu, and that was just magical. And that's where I pretty much grew up from the age of 10 through high school.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And you reference living in Hawaii, growing up in Hawaii a lot, and our we've been friends for how many years?
31 years.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I moved here almost exactly. It was this time of year, mid-November 1992, to work here at the radio station. Well, it was Broadcast Park back right then on Foster Road. But, yep, I remember walking in there, and you were sitting in a similar chair in a studio hosting the AM morning show.
Probably smoking a cigarette.
I don't remember that. And then going into a sales meeting in a closet, basically, with George Carl and Ira C. Smith, who I just saw walk in, yeah, and Darla Aaron, and people I'm still friends with, Leo Slattery, and still people around town I'm friends with today.
It's that kind of a place. People don't want to leave here.
That's what happened to me.
Yes, you have friends for 40, 50 years.
That's what happened to me.
Same for me. I never thought I would stay.
Me neither.
More than a couple of
years.
This
is going to be 2 or 3 year stop.
Right?
Yep.
Napa's different.
It's quicksand.
So how do you think that growing up, moving around from place to place as a military family kid affected you? Because every time I've met people with that background, they, you fit a similarity of characteristics, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm. I think about that every now and then. First of all, as a kid, you don't know any different, right? And especially because a lot of my friends, up until we got to Hawaii, were military kids. And so it's like, all right, you're somewhere for usually 1, 2, or 3 years. You pick up, you move, and you move into a new community, and you just make new friends at school, and that's how it rolls. And so I think I've always had that ability, like just drop me in a new place and I'm going to be comfortable and be able to talk to folks and make new friends. But I think also spending most of my, all of my teenage years, well, essentially from 10 to 18, till I went away to college in Hawaii, shaped me immensely as well.
In what way?
I grew up as a minority. Right? I was a haole in Hawaii. It takes a while, I think, for people to accept you, and they're going to accept you based on your character, and that, okay, he might be a haole, he might be a white guy, but he's okay, he's cool. He respects cultures, different cultures, the environment, things like that. That's what gets haoles in Hawaii in trouble, really, is when they go there and they don't respect the people, the place, and the culture. And I've always been a person that respects people, places, and culture, and I love to travel, and I think that all kind of jibes together. So and then I just had an amazing, I still have such great friends from growing up there, and all we did was surf, starting in middle school and to the point where I almost didn't graduate from high school. Because we lived on a ridge, and I could oversee the bay. And if I saw waves in the bay, I'd call my friend and I'm like, hey man, there's waves out there. Everyone else is going to school. Let's go get these to ourselves. And we would a lot. And it turned out to be difficult to keep up a GPA. And I think I had to get like a 99 on a psychology exam my senior year to graduate, and I got 100.
All right.
So it wasn't that I couldn't do the work. It's just that I was kind of a goof off a little bit, and given the choice of going surfing and having fun with my friends or going to school, I chose surfing and fun. But at the end of the day, I was able to. I did graduate on time, and I went to college. I had a reasonable SAT score and just a low GPA, and so I went away to college, and everything worked out fine.
Yeah. Yeah. When I think about somebody who's a fighter pilot, particularly a test pilot,
answer is yes. If you're thinking of the great Santini,
yes,
that's where you're going.
Yeah.
That was my father.
And, you know, and great Santini portrays a pretty harsh father figure.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But even if you're not harsh, there's a lot of structure. There's a lot of expectation.
Yes.
Rigidity.
All those things.
All true.
All of those things. My dad, he just turned 83 yesterday. We're playing. He's retired in Hawaii. And we're playing phone tag still. I didn't get a chance to talk to him. But, you know, bless him. I mean, you know, he was in Vietnam, multiple tours in F4. He was a very strict disciplinarian for a while when I was a kid. I remember his yes sir, no sir. We had buzz cuts, my brother and I. He did not mess around. You know, you're told something once. If you do it wrong the second time, you're going to get, you know, spanked if you're lucky. You know, pretty bombastic, you know, the officer's club on weekends, with his fellow fighter pilots, all the stereotypes pretty much fit. They pretty much fit. I don't want to paint him as an ogre or a terrible person. I think I got a lot of good things from him. I think have a higher degree of discipline than most people, for better or worse, frankly. He valued education immensely and did pay my way through college, which I appreciate. So he was a tightwad, but generous where it mattered. If it was any sporting thing, all in. Any education thing, all in. He helped Jillian and I buy our first house here in Napa, which we would not have been able to do back in the 90s, you know, at Alta Heights. Helped us buy our first house in Napa, and has been supportive and still like helps put money aside for our kids who are in college now. So he's in his older age now. He is softening up quite a bit too. So It's just, I think he was a byproduct of the United States Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm. Was that military background go back another generation or two?
No, it does not. My dad's family is from Wilmette, Illinois, an upscale suburb of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And his dad was a banker, a very well-known banker, actually. Started during the Great Depression, I believe. And as a page boy, making just enough money to take a train from Wilmette to downtown Chicago and back, worked his way all the way up to become the president of the bank, and was the president of the American Bankers Association, right around probably when I was born. And influential in national politics. My grandfather's hallmark is that he was the first banker to loan Ray Kroc money.
Wow.
to really, McDonald's had started, but it was like a one restaurant, you know, thing, and he wanted to go big, and nobody would really loan him money because he didn't have collateral. And my grandfather was known throughout the Midwest as he would loan money if you had a good business plan and he believed in your character. And so Ray Kroc fit that bill. He loaned Ray Kroc money from the American National Bank and Trust in downtown Chicago, and the rest was history for both of them. I mean, so and he was the first outsider brought to the board of directors of McDonald's, helped take them public, and so he was a fascinating guy. But no, if there was military in the family, it goes back more generations than I know. My father, I think, was drawn to that. I learned only recently he wanted to go to West Point. And he didn't get the congressional nomination from his congressman's district. He went to Colgate. So my dad's super smart. He went to Colgate, graduate degree in economics, and then but did ROTC while he was there. And so they, you know, at graduation they take off their gowns, and then underneath is their military uniform, and straight into the Marine Corps and Quantico and Officers Candidate School and all that.
And that was around 1960s, mid-60s?
Early 60s? Yeah, I would say probably around 19... He was born in 40, so it was probably, early 60s.
Okay.
Early 60s.
And we weren't really that deeply involved in Vietnam at that point. Did he ever express regret that, you know, you can join the military when you're mostly at peace, and then suddenly you're in a... You're flying F-4s over Hanoi or something?
No, never expressed regret whatsoever, He didn't talk about all that much, and I guess I've never really asked him all that much, but I start to think about it now as he's getting older. As I mentioned, he just turned 83 yesterday, and we don't get to spend that much time with one another, unfortunately. Like, he's come to Napa for our kids' graduations and things like that. Just doesn't travel as much as he used to, and I would like to get to Hawaii more often, frankly, but we just do a lot of travel as it is between work and my wife Jillian's family being in Scotland, where we go that way a lot, and so, no, I need to talk to him more about that. It's cool seeing old photos of when they're in Vietnam, and he's got funny stories of what it was like, obviously not when they're flying and dropping bombs or whatever they're doing, but just being on the base and how they pass the time. Those are pretty good stories.
Fascinating life. Did you ever think about the service yourself?
Oh my goodness. I don't know if I ever told you this story, but so when I graduated from Washington State in 91, communications degree, and what I wanted to do, my aspiration was to get into radio, to broadcast management, which is how I ended up here. My mother lived in Maryland, and so while I was trying to figure things out, she said, why don't you come out here? They owned a restaurant in Prince Frederick, Maryland, so it's an hour south of D.C., and they were taking over the food and beverage of a country club nearby, and they said, why don't you run the restaurant for us, where I had worked, during breaks, etc. Run the restaurant for us, and we're going to start this new thing, and figure it out. Maybe you like this, maybe you want to stay here. Well, anyway, they sold the restaurant to a guy, and he said, you're doing really well. I need you to stay on board and show me how to do things. I showed up one day, and he fired me. He goes, he met me in the parking lot. He goes, hey, I don't need you anymore. And I'm like, oh, all right, what do I do now? And so I drove up to Annapolis, Maryland. And I went to the strip mall where the recruiting center was, and they had Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. And I'm in my little red Mazda pickup, and how old am I? 22, 23 years old, just out of college. And I'm like, this is what I knew. This is what I grew up. I'm like, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. Army, Navy, it could be by the water. Air Force seems like military light. Marines, my dad was a Marine. They're kind of crazy. I don't know if I'm up for that, frankly. I know your son was a Marine, too. And I thought, I just sat there for about a half hour, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. And I said, I'm going to go to Taco Bell, which is all I could afford, and have lunch and think about this. This is a big decision.
Army, Navy, Air Force Marines.
And I chose Taco Bell. And I went to Taco Bell in Annapolis, and I got my bean burrito and my soft taco for whatever, $3. I said, this is too big of a decision. I'm not going to make this decision right here, right now.
That's smart.
And obviously didn't pull the trigger, as it were.
And as they say, the rest is history. Where did you get fascinated enough with radio that you actually had a plan to study and be a manager in broadcasting?
That's a good question, too. I had a girlfriend through college, and her family's from Marin County. Her father was a executive in radio. He was the president of Shamrock Broadcasting Corporation, which I believe is owned by Disney. And so I had a huge admiration and respect for him. We were together pretty much all through college and spent a lot of time with their family and just thought and think. He's still around. He's 90 years old. I spoke with him recently. Of him, and I thought this would actually be a pretty cool career. I've always sort of liked radio and admired it. I was on the air when I was at Washington State University. I remember a project I had to do as a sixth grader, like, what do you want to be? And I think by then I realized I wasn't going to be a pro athlete, but I drew a broadcast booth with Howard Cosell in it and Don Meredith and, the guys from Monday Night Football. And so I remember going back to the age of whatever that is, 9, 10, 11, that would be kind of a fun thing to be in sportscasting. So somewhere around there, I just thought there might be a career opportunity, and then my degree's in communications and did a lot of work at Washington State University, which has one of the best communication schools in the country. It's Edward R. Murrow School of Communications at WSU. So did news, did broadcasting, did, you know, on-air stuff, did production for radio and television there. And so that was what inspired me. And so when the whole thing in Maryland kind of crumbled and fell apart, we ended up in the Bay Area, you know, back where her family is from in San Rafael. And he said, you know, if you really need to get a job in radio selling radio advertising, that is the ground floor. That's how you get going. And he gave me the number of his friend, Tom Young, at KVON and KVYN. And I talked to Tom, and Tom sent me to George Carl, and came up and I interviewed one day with George Carl. And he said, you know, I think he probably thought I was just a dumb kid right out of school. And but at the same time, it's a commission job, right? It's like sink or swim. And George said, well, I'll call you back. And he called me back at the end of that day and said, hey, I don't have a sales job for you, but I've got a telemarketing job for you. And I said, thanks, but no thanks. I was smart enough at that point to turn that down. And the next day he called me back. He said, we just had somebody quit. Do you want to come work for me? And I said, yes, I do. And so that was it. The next day, I think I drove up and went to Happy Donuts in the River Park Shopping Center and had a cup of coffee and a donut while I waited to get into the station. And there you have it.
That was 92.
92.
You ended up doing a lot of broadcasting on mostly KVON, right? The football broadcasts? Mixture?
Well,
no, that's right.
It was a mixture. It was a mixture, yeah.
That's right,
yeah,
transition.
You know, I think it mainly started out two things. Almost right away, I talked to Ira and bonded with him over sports. I've always been a huge sports fan and pretty knowledgeable. And I said, hey, if you ever need someone to pull a cable or keep stats or anything, let me know. And it was like, okay, see you at Napa Valley College. There's a women's basketball game tonight and I could use some help. And so I did. And I thought I was just going to be, you know, tracking shots and rebounds and assists. And the next thing you know, he's putting the microphone in my face. And I thought, okay, well, I could talk about this. And then I became his primary fill-in, you know, when he'd go on vacation. I did that for a long time, maybe 10 years. And then the next year he said, how would you like to do the Justin Siena football games? And that was like, to me, I was like, oh, awesome. And it's back in this is in 1993, I think. And they played on a Saturday afternoon and there was like eight people in the stands and probably, I don't know how many were listening, but it was just so much fun. I remember how nervous I was on the first game, like, heart pounding through my shirt, nervous, but just really had such, and I did that for 20 years. 20 years is a long time. And then you and I would do things together. I was thinking about that driving over. Remember Rex's Picks we used to have on the morning show on the AM, where I would do football picks every Friday morning. I put a lot of work into that. And I remember one day we were talking about the Niners game, and Steve Young was the Niners quarterback. He was a fantastic quarterback. And I think you might have asked me if I thought he was better than Joe Montana. And I was making the case that you could argue that he was, you know, on par based on statistics, that he was on par. And some old fella called in and just reamed me a new one for even saying that. I thought that was funny. And the other thing, remember, we did is KVON was on the Raiders network. And so in 1995, I was trying to move up the ladder in sports broadcasting.
Now, just it got inserted. These are some of the best stories that you and I share in common.
So in 95, I was trying to move up the ladder in sportscasting, and I had met with a nationally syndicated show out of San Francisco, Ron Barr's Sportsline. And they said, we can't bring you on air, but you could be a producer. And I thought about it. And I was like, I don't know, it's not really what I want to do. I would have made more money in this and that. So one day, one of the guys there called me and left me a message, said, hey, the Oakland Raiders just announced they're moving back to the Bay Area from L.A. They're looking for an executive producer for their pre- and post-game shows on their flagship, and I've recommended you. And I had a sarcastic voicemail, outgoing voicemail, inappropriate in hindsight. And he goes, by the way, you need to change your outgoing message right away. My wife and I were out of, Jillian, we were out of town in Mendocino. We came back to all these voicemails. And the next voicemail was from the head of that radio station, KNEW in San Francisco. Hey, this is Alan. I don't remember his name. Alan Legwan, something like that. KNEW in San Francisco. Interesting voicemail. Anyway, somebody had recommended you. And so I got that job. And that was so much fun. Executive producer in their pre and post game shows in the city. And then the following year, we on KVON on the AM were on the Raiders network, and we did our own locally originating pre and post game show from Character Sports Bar at the Marriott that I produced and hosted. But we were looking for a co-host with me, and this the funny part, I was thinking about this today. You and I took to lunch Raymond Chandler, the legendary Raiders tight end, who I'd met the previous year, and took him to lunch with his agent, Downtown Joe's. And we're sitting there with Raymond Chandler, and we get to talking about what we want to do and this and that, and, you know, come on up, we'll do this show. And, of course, we had no money, right? No, I don't remember if you remember how much money we told Raymond Chandler he would get per show.
It was, I want to say, like $90 or $60 or something.
It was $150. $150. $150. Everything was going great with the conversation until that came up. And they got up and excused themselves. And I think we could hear tires squealing from Main Street in downtown Napa as they were leaving Downtown Joe's.
I remember watching their faces change when that figure came out. Just this, like,
are you serious, right?
It wasn't so much disappointment as sort of simmering rage.
Yeah,
like, you wasted my time.
Oh man, that was funny. Like, and what do you think they were expecting? Like.
$1,500, not $150,
or maybe $15,000.
I don't know.
Yeah, but and so it ended up being Dave Dalby. Yeah, Dave Dalby, and we had a good time together. But Dave was here in town, and I don't want to speak poorly about the deceased, but we had a good time together. Yeah. But Dave had a really good time during the games, let's say.
And that $150 was just fine.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was more than fine. We'd actually end up becoming pretty good friends.
Yeah.
And it's still like when I see old clips of the NFL and, you know, the Raiders in their heyday and the Super Bowl, and you see number 50, Dave Dalby, right? Yes. There in all of it. He was a legend.
He was.
Legend.
Beloved.
And it's just a gentle giant and the nicest guy. Yeah. I'll tell you one funny story. He called me one day. He goes, hey, do you want to go down to this Raiders thing in Oakland? I'm like, yeah, sure, that'd be cool. That's when we were doing this together. I had a Mazda Miata. Mm-hmm. Dave folds himself. He wanted me to drive him. He folds himself into my Miata, and we drive down to Oakland together, and we pull up. And by then, he just got to be Dave, like my friend Dave. And we pull into the parking lot, and there's all these Raiders fans, and they swarm Dave Dalby, just swarm, double D, number 50. And this, and I'm like, I guess this guy's a legend. Yeah. I kind of forgot about this. And we went in there and had the most amazing dinner. And I'm sitting next to Jim Otto, another legendary Raiders center. And Jim Otto's 10 fingers all went in different directions, like the L shapes and lightning bolt. It was crazy. All the Raiders legends were there. And it was one of those kind of pinch myself moments as just a kid that grew up watching these guys and loving sports. And good times. A lot of good opportunities and memories from the times here.
Yeah. So we're almost out of time, but last topic, and this is something that's always fascinated me. There are a significant number of people in the community who know this, but not everybody, so that's why I want to talk about it. And what they know is that you have a series of traditional annual events that you host.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You have there are some people in the world who always have a Halloween party, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Or they always have a 4th of July barbecue or something, and they make a big thing. You have about a dozen of these things, don't you? Do you have one every month of the year?
No.
10?
No.
You have 10?
No.
I mean,
no.
You have so many. I mean, I've attended
It is the season. The season started last Saturday, and you were there.
Okay.
It was...
pumpkin carving.
Yeah, and that happens because Jillian and my first date was at Guy Carl, not George Carl. His son Guy Carl had a 2030 club. I was not in the club, but they were trying to get me in the club. Mm-hmm. Pumpkin carving party, and actually I was going to go hang out with Mike Prawl, another kind of, you know, legendary Napa dude, and he and I were going out. I just met this gal the weekend before at the Calistoga Beer and Sausage Festival and got her number and called her up and said, hey, you want to go with me to this pumpkin carving party? And my wife, Jill, has just moved here from Scotland. They don't have pumpkin carving parties there. They don't carve pumpkins there. They have turnips.
Right.
So, yeah, that sounds fun. And so Jill and Mike Prawl and I went out together to this pumpkin carving party. And then, you know, we've been together ever since. That was
Mike Prawl.
I need to get together, Mike. I haven't seen Mike in a while either. Yeah. I owe him a call and maybe go meet for a drink or something. But no, so because of that, we hosted our own pumpkin carving party a year later, which would have been 1995, and have hosted one every year since. And in the early days, it was a handful of us young adults carving pumpkins and having some good Napa Valley wine, and then we all get married, and then we all have kids, and these parties turn into massive parties with 60 people and everything else. And now they're starting to get smaller again as our kids are all off to college and whatnot. So there's that. The next one is I inherited my grandmother's baby grand piano maybe a decade ago, and it's in our living room. Nobody really plays. But we do the Ugly Sweater Christmas sing-along, and thanks to you, we've got the best pianist in Napa, and Andrew Moore, yeah, that comes and plays, and everybody wears ugly sweaters. And we did this before ugly sweaters were the thing. True. Now it's like, true, everybody's got an ugly sweater party. I almost don't want to do it anymore.
You were a tastemaker.
But we were tastemakers, and so that's coming up. I won't broadcast when, no, but so you'll be there.
It'll ugly
be
sweater party.
Yeah, and then we got Burns Night, which is that's the big one, and it's actually a production, and that's for Robert Burns, the Scottish poet, famous Scottish poet from the late 1700s, early 1800s, and Burns Night parties are huge in Scotland and all over the world, and everybody knows him. They just don't know they know him. Auld Lang Syne is the one they all know. But if we do the big one, you know, we're talking bagpipers, we're talking band, we're talking poems, kilts, dancing, and all that. It took us a number of years to figure out how not to lose thousands of dollars on this thing. That's not our ambition. We just want to break even, but we're getting close. And then that kind of, and then I talked to Ira C, and I was like, hey, he used to invite me when I first moved here. He and his friends did an Oscars party. And so from the time I walked in the door here 30 some years ago, he would invite me to this party, and it was great. It was people a generation older than me, but it was kind of a fun and an honor to be among them.
I attended that a few times.
And so as they got older, I remember being at one of his friends' house for this party. They just announced, hey, this is the last year we're doing this. We're too old. And so my wife and I looked at each other. We said, we can't allow that. So we have been hosting their Oscars party for about a decade. The food's much better. The food and wine is much better at our house, if I do say so, but it's a lot of fun. And
so that's four.
That's it.
What about the river rafting trip?
Oh, okay, the river rafting trip. That also goes back to the radio station as well. I don't know if you know this. Remember we used to do where George Carl and I would go up to some outdoor show in Sacramento, and he was Mr. Outdoors, and my job was to walk around to these booths and try to get them to donate vacations and whatnot, and in exchange they would get advertising. And so I got to know some river rafting outfits and stuff like that. They would donate these things, and what we would do with them is, remember, we used to have these on-air auctions. Mm-hmm. It was a commercial auction, and so once or twice I bought in the auction the items which I got donated, and that's how I got into rafting in 1993. And every summer since, have put together a whitewater rafting weekend. You've been on many of them. And it's just a group of guys, and we go somewhere around the state. We move it around based on rainfall, actually. It's what I start to look at in the spring, is how much rainfall have we had. And if it's been a dry year, we do the South Fork of the American River, because it's always got water, and it's easy, and it's 2.5 hours away. Or this past summer, we were way up in the Trinity Alps. I mean, we had so much rain this year, and we did the main Trinity River, I think. And it was fun. There was a bit of water in there, and there was 12 of us guys on, and what, four people swam involuntarily? I mean, it was no joke.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it was a good one. So that's another tradition, yeah.
So just five? There's just five?
It just seems like a million, but there's just five. Well, try putting them on. I mean,
well, see, this is where we close the loop, because I think that this series of annual things that you do,
yeah,
pretty much the same every year, yeah, for many, many years in a row,
yeah,
without faltering. That's the structure and discipline thing.
Could be.
That came from
my dad and the way
you were raised.
Could be.
The responsibilities and structure. And do you ever feel like people are counting on you to hold these parties?
Yes, I do. And it actually gives me a little bit of angst, anxiety every now and then. And I think about, like, well, when did I get invited by this person to do anything? Like, well, I don't owe them anything. Like, you know, and I guess we do it because we like to, we love it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm like, if nobody comes, I don't care. I'm happy hanging out with my wife. Like, if we have a ugly sweater Christmas sing-along and no one shows up, great, Jill and I and Andrew, and we'll be singing songs and drinking wine, and it'll be ugly sweaters, and it'll be all good. And even the pumpkin carving party last weekend, we were out there, and it's probably 20 minutes after the party was supposed to start, and no one's there. I go, is no one coming? Like, the RSVP list said 30 people would be here, and but then 30 people showed
up.
I do sometimes get a little stressed out. Frankly, right now I'm stressed out about Burns Night, our the band we've had for so long. It's hard to find a Kaylee band, like a band that plays traditional classic Scottish songs, like dancing songs, mm-hmm. and swing your partner around and around type stuff. The band moved to Connecticut. How dare they? And so I'm having trouble right now finding a band, and that's the last piece, but it's an important piece. And somebody called me yesterday. He's like, hey, are we going to do the party or not? And I'm like, hey, man, I'm looking for a band. Chill out, relax. Like, if you have any ideas, let me know. I'm even talking about, like, hiring a DJ and telling them the playlist and doing it that way, because we were at a wedding in Scotland this past summer, and that's what they did, and it worked out great. Mm-hmm. So, but you also need someone to coach you, to train you, like the caller. The caller is like, nobody knows how to do this. Well, my wife knows how to do the dances. And when I'm reminded, I know how to do the dances. But by the time we're dancing, there's already been a lot of wine and some whiskey consumed, which makes the dancing more fun and makes everybody more relaxed. Like, who gives a rip that nobody knows how to do this? Mm-hmm. Go out there and have fun. Mm-hmm. And people do. And this is the one party. Of the things we do, this is the one I get the most, like, I need an invitation to this party. And we are fixed on the number of people we can have based on the location and everything else. But this is the one that people are like, oh my God, if they see Facebook photos or whatever, they hear about it. How do I get invited to this party next year? And I tell them, I'll put them on the list, and I forget. But then I don't feel so badly about it anyway, so.
All right. Well, we've run out of time. I knew this would be a lot
of fun. Hey, is anybody going to really care about any of this, by the way?
I do. That's all that matters.
Okay.
It's my podcast.
All right. It's sort of like me and our parties. It's like, yeah. Okay. Then, yeah. All right.
So, Rex Stultz, thanks for being on the Berry Pod.
If anybody listened and they enjoyed it, thank you. And thanks for the invitation.
You're welcome. This Berry Pod episode recorded on November 3rd, 2023.
You're listening to The Berry Pod, tastings from Wine Country Live in the morning.
On 99.3, thevine.com.